You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It was common knowledge at Fox News that its chairman and CEO, Roger Ailes, had engaged in unwanted sexual conduct. And there were others at the cable network, most notably Bill O'Reilly, the host of the popular The O'Reilly Factor. In 2014, Gretchen Carlson, the longtime co-host of Fox and Friends, decided she'd had enough of sexual harassment from Mr. Ailes, and so she began recording it. Although she had a carefully laid out timetable to bring a suit in September 2016, she was suddenly fired months earlier on June 23, 2016, by Fox General Counsel Diane Brandy and Senior Executive VP Bill Shine. So she fired back, received a $20 million payout, but she also felt the need to help others. Her new book, published by Center Street, is called Be Fierce, Stop Harassment and Take Your Power Back. It's a guide to standing up against unwanted behavior, and Ms. Carlson is donating a portion of its proceeds to her nonprofit, Gretchen's Gift of Courage Fund. Welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that introduction as well, because as you know, there are certain details that I can't get into, and I appreciate you telling the full story.
And that's because you had to sign an agreement before you were hired?
Well, that was, yes, many people are forced into signing confidentiality clauses, but also the way in which culture has decided to settle sexual harassment disputes is one of two ways usually. Settlements, which I received, which silence women from ever being able to tell you the details. And then if you have an arbitration clause in your employment contract, you don't get to go to a jury trial, you go to arbitration, which is also secret, and you can never, ever talk about it.
Would it have mattered if you had sued Roger Ailes himself?
I did.
So how is that different than going after Fox?
Well, there was a law in New York State that allowed me to do that, to sue him personally. Not every state has a human rights law like that, but it still kept me silent from being able to talk about the details and the fact that I did come to a settlement. But most amazing, which I'd like to point out, is that I also got a public apology. That never happens.
What do you mean it never happened?
It never happens. If women come to settlement terms, they usually have the settlement. They're not working at that place anymore, and they can't ever speak about the details. But rarely does a company also say that they were sorry for what happened to the person.
One of the things that we're finding out now in the wake of the Harvey Weinstein scandals is that some of the actresses tried to warn each other. Did female employees at Fox warn each other?
Yeah, I can't, I can't talk about that. But I will say that when you're going through sexual harassment, you feel completely alone. And one of the reasons why women continue to feel that way is twofold. Because you're not allowed to talk about it because of confidentiality agreements, but also because of the way that we as a society treat women when they do come forward. You know, we automatically call them liars and troublemakers. And so, that's an incredibly alone experience and an excruciating choice to make about coming forward.
You quote a Marge Piercy poem that she wrote about what a woman has to be.
A virgin.
Among other things.
Wear white all the time, be perfect. I mean, that's the way that society, looks at the victim still. But, I do feel like we've reached this tipping point right now with the allegations coming out of Hollywood, which are absolutely outrageous. I feel like the good side of that is that women have become more brave and courageous to tell their stories.
To some degree, hasn't this also become a political thing? Your former bosses are gloating over the collapse of Harvey Weinstein as a donor to Democratic candidates, as though this is mostly a problem of the left rather than something that cuts across the whole political spectrum.
Isn't that absolute,
especially Fox?
Isn't that absolute hypocrisy? I mean, the idea that suddenly something that happened there 15 months ago was invisible. And this is what Americans are so frustrated with in general. This is part of the political divide and the divisiveness that we're experiencing right now.
But I was thinking back to the Anita Hill hearings, and the Democrats and the Republicans both just ignored what she was saying, and Clarence Thomas wound up on the Supreme Court.
And it was all men, remember? There were no female senators doing any of that questioning. After that moment in time, a lot of women did run for office. But on a personal note, that was one of the first stories I covered when I came into the news business. And shortly thereafter, I experienced sexual harassment at my job in Virginia. So talk about having this personal experience where I believed her in listening to her, and a couple of weeks later, I was her. And this is happening to millions of women across the country. It's not just me.
And it only began there because you had also gone through the beauty pageant experiences. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen while you were your way to becoming Miss America?
No, I document two other horrific experiences that I had at the end of my term of being Miss America. And by the way, just because you're Miss America doesn't mean that you should be sexually harassed or assaulted.
There's no reason for being sexually harassed.
I know, forever having to go through those experiences. But both with high-ranking, high-powered television and PR executives. The case in New York City, the gentleman spent the entire, well, he's actually not a gentleman at all. the perpetrator spent the day helping me, making phone calls. I thought, wow, he really is going to help me break into the TV business. And I didn't realize that also meant breaking into my pants. So later on at night, in the way home in the car, he threw himself on top of me and stuck his tongue down my throat. Oh. That was my experience as a 22-year-old young woman.
Well, you were the first classical violinist to ever win the Miss America crown. Mm-hmm. You didn't see classical music as a career choice?
Oh, yes. Oh, it was my career as a child. I was a prodigy on the violin and, you know, practiced 4 hours a day. I performed for Isaac Stern when I was 10 years old, did my first solo performance with the Minnesota Orchestra at age 12. And so this was really my career and how I learned self-confidence, courage to stand up in front of all those people all the time and perform, and discipline in my life to achieve goals. But I'm one of those kids you read about who burned out at 17, and I really wanted to do so many other things in life, and I knew it was tunnel vision. And so much to the devastation of my parents, I quit and concentrated on my studies at Stanford University.
And became a TV star.
Well, but
to their embarrassment.
But you know, I never expected to become Miss America. Trust me, it was never on my radar screen. I was a tomboy. I struggled with my weight as a kid, and so my mom got a brochure in the mail that said half of your points for Miss America were based on talent. She called me up. I was studying at Oxford at the time. She said, "I found something for you to try," and I said, "I don't think so, Mom." But my mom, you know, told me every day that I could be anything I wanted to be, and she was an incredibly encouraging person. And she said, "I think you should give this a shot." And once you put a goal in front of me, I give it 110%. And that's how I ended up in the whole program.
I'm talking with Gretchen Carlson, who's written a book called Be Fierce, Stop Harassment and Take Your Power Back. I don't know whether you say harassment or harassment.
It doesn't matter as long as we get rid of the scourge,
right? What do you say to people who wonder why it took so long for women to talk about Harvey Weinstein's behavior? And he is definitely not alone. We'll say behavior of that sort. In Hollywood.
And everywhere else.
And everywhere else.
You know what happened after I jumped off the cliff by myself? So many other women started reaching out to me. And it was every profession, from waitresses to members of our military to teachers, everywhere.
Now, 40-something years ago, a woman told me that she had been working with Bill Cosby on a comedy routine. And I'm not going to tell you the circumstances, but she couldn't pursue her complaint against Bill Cosby 40 years ago.
Right. Well, and here's the other reason. Women don't come forward because we call them liars. And we malign them before they even jump off the cliff. So why would women come forward? But here's the thing. More women are now brave. And if I had anything to do with that, I'm immensely proud to have given them that courage. And they're putting their faces to it. And you know what? I really don't believe there's a turning back now, because men are also in the game. And they are supporting these women, and we need men in this fight.
Now, what do you think the offer is? In most cases, are they offering to help advance the careers of the women involved?
No. Sexual harassment is about power. It's they tell you that they're going to advance your career if you do such and such, but
or your career can be damaged if you
please,
don't.
If you rebuff it, for sure your career is damaged. That's actually the undersold portion of sexual harassment. People want to read all the salacious details. And by the way, you can read my complaint online, even though I can't talk about it. You can read the salacious details, but the underreported part is the retaliation that occurs when you do rebuff and you're demoted and you're eventually fired. You want to know how many millions of American women have lost the American dream because of this? Millions.
In researching the book, you learned that the term sexual harassment didn't even exist until 1975.
Right. So in a way, we have...
It existed. What were we calling it then?
We weren't calling it anything. We were calling it, that's what you get for working as a woman. But, you know, at least now we have laws on the books. So we have made baby steps with regard to that. I'm hoping to change some of the laws, and that's why I've been doing so much advocacy work on Capitol Hill.
The first real case of sexual harassment was brought in 1974. What happened?
Yeah, well, the woman was not believed, right? And eventually she got some sort of a small payout, but at least it was starting to build, you know, precedent. Now, here's the problem with those arbitration clauses. Since they're not in a real court, we're losing years of setting law precedent in these cases. It's like we don't have any precedent for it. It's invisible. It's another reason that I'm working so hard to get rid of these clauses.
In 1979, Catherine MacKinnon published Sexual Harassment of Working Women. What did she argue in the book?
Well, she argued that, you know, for sure that women need to be heard and not and to be believed automatically. I mean, listen, all these years later, we're still facing that same taboo culture. And this is one reason that I think women coming forward is so imperative right now.
And you've heard from thousands,
thousands
you say.
Of them. Thousands. And here's the thing. I responded to every single one. This was my good Midwestern upbringing. My parents encouraged me to always write handwritten thank you notes. And the same was true when these women reached out to me. If I, you know, I felt a sense of duty that their voices had never been heard, ever.
You write about a woman you call Madeline, who started her career as a radio broadcaster in the 1980s. Mm. What did her boss say when she asked him for a raise?
Yeah, he actually told her to spread them. I mean, awful.
And then she reported that to her manager?
And she was, you know, demoted and taken off the show. But she's still working in her chosen profession. So, you know, she's one of the stories that I talk about that I really think is a powerful, positive story, somebody who didn't lose her job.
You interviewed many women for this book, and one common theme was that every office has that guy.
That guy that the office protects.
Why are they protecting? Is it because it's a person in power?
No, it's not always a person in power. That's what I found out. It's not always the moneymaker, which makes, I think, it even more sick. Is why would we protect even somebody? No, wait, we shouldn't protect anybody. But I've come to the conclusion after speaking to some psychologists that people don't want to admit that a work environment may not be safe. And so it's easier to just ignore and be a bystander. What I'm calling for in my book is for bystanders to turn into allies. We need them to also speak up.
It's often worked the other way. Several women who have now come forward about Harvey Weinstein have said that when they told somebody about what he had done, they were told, oh, that's just Harvey.
Oh. I think he also gave the excuse that he was a product of the 60s and the 70s. You know, that's a cop-out. I mean, it's outrageous that for 30 years—
Otherwise, every man who is a product of the 60s and 70s
would be like that. You know, and my grandparents who were born in the 1900s would also be like that, and I don't think they treated each other that way. Those are all cop-outs, and what is more alarming about the Weinstein story is that he had enablers and lawyers and assistants who all covered for him, and you know what they did in the process of doing that? They shut up the victims.
And we're not just talking about men. Women also
were part
of that.
Women do as well. And so it's an equal opportunity offender on all fronts.
You write that, I'm quoting, no woman wants to be known as the office nag, the one who's always calling out people in conversations for being inappropriate. So how do you know when to speak up and what to say? And how do you respond to, oh, let's just try to get along, or can't you take a joke?
Well, here's the problem with sexual harassment, and this is why I think it's remained so taboo, is that it's subjective. So what I might think is offensive, my colleague sitting next to me might not. So that makes it, I think, more difficult to get our arms around and really solve. But I have to tell you something. In my story and in the Harvey Weinstein story and in the thousands of women I heard from, the allegations were usually so frickin' outrageous, excuse my French.
It's okay. We're allowed to say frickin'.
They were so outrageous that there was nothing subjective about it at all. So my research has shown that the majority of the cases are not just some little lewd joke. This is not about not having a sense of humor. I think, you know, We're far past that now. We're seeing by the Weinstein story and the allegations in my case that these were outrageous things that were happening to women, not subtle, subjective things.
And that's what happened with you? Oh, right. You can't talk about that.
Well, you can read my complaint.
Can you talk about somebody who's like you, who knew Roger
Ailes? I am. That's why I wrote the book. I mean, there.
You weren't the only one that Roger Ailes talked to.
Well, and you know, people can also read about that as well. I mean, look at what Harvey Weinstein did. He didn't just have one victim. We don't even know how many victims he allegedly had. And this is the point, that it's not just my story. It's not just the women in Harvey Weinstein. It's women everywhere. And are we as a culture going to agree to try and change that? Mainly for our children. I have a 12-year-old son and a 14-year-old daughter. And for all your listeners who have children, do we want the same indignities for them? I don't.
What did you tell your daughter when this whole story broke?
And more importantly, my son. Because I believe it is so important for us to raise our sons to respect girls early on and women later on in the workplace. I told my children that mommy was about to jump off a cliff and do something incredibly courageous. And I worried about my kids. And I'll tell you that they have learned from me what being brave and courageous is all about. My daughter came home from school the day my resolution was announced, and she said, "Mommy, so many people were asking me about you." And I was very anxious about that. And she said, "Mommy, I was so proud to be able to say that you were my mom." And a couple weeks later, she told off some bullies, finally. She found the courage, and she said to me, "Mommy, I did it because I saw you do it." And that's what this whole story is about, and that's why I wrote this book, so that other women will have that same reaction.
Gretchen Carlson was the host of The Real Story on Fox News for 3 years, co-hosted Fox and Friends for over 7 years, and she was a child prodigy on the violin. In 1989, she was the first classical violinist ever to win the Miss America contest. And now there is a book called Be Fierce, Stop Harassment and Take Your Power Back. It is published by Center Street, which is a division of Hachette. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we are back with Gretchen Carlson, who's written Be Fierce, Stop Harassment, and Take Your Power Back. Before we went into that break, we were talking about what constitutes sexual harassment. The law recognizes two kinds, quid pro quo behavior and hostile work environment.
Mm-hmm. So quid pro quo is when somebody actually would say to you, "Hey, you know, sleep with me or you're not going to get the promotion." It's like a give and take. The hostile work environment is you know, a bit tougher to prove. And again, that's where we fall into that subjective area. But hostile work environment would be, you know, lewd jokes or demeaning behavior or...
You might laugh at a joke that I told and the next person might be totally offended.
Exactly. And so that's where that subjective line lies.
You're married and were making the kind of salary that allowed you to hire an excellent lawyer to represent you. What does a single woman or a single mother who's barely making it do when she's being harassed?
Mm-hmm. And that question gnawed at me after my case broke. And I'm proud to say that I'm starting a solution for that. I set up the Gift of Courage Fund, as you mentioned, a while back. And through that, I'm financially supporting a new initiative called the Gretchen Carlson Leadership Initiative. It's a 9-city tour. It kicks off next month in Dallas-Fort Worth. 3 days of workshops in each city for underserved women, those women that you're talking about. They will be able to come to these workshops for free. They will be able to get legal advice, advice on sexual harassment, advice on domestic violence, and how to become civically and politically involved so that they have a voice. So I'm extremely proud to be able to fund this for these women so that they have a start at getting answers for themselves too.
Do you think that we're at a turning point with sexual harassment because suddenly these stories have become such big news?
I do. You know, as horrific as those allegations are, I'm not going to say that I think that's positive because it's horrible what happened to those women. But I do think that it's a watershed moment.
On the other hand, some of the people who were accused in the past, co-workers of yours at Fox, haven't exactly been punished. Bill O'Reilly's still doing broadcasts, and he and Sean Hannity brings him on regularly to defend him. Any number of people who have been accused in the past are still thriving. So what do we have to do to get past this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that that was outrageous for any company to bring back somebody on a national scope who's been accused of sexual harassment in the way in which that happened. Because here's the stark reality. The women who he settled with don't have a voice. So he's allowed to go out and say whatever he wants, but the women can't respond. And as a society and a culture, we should all care about that and want to change that. That's wrong. And also, you know, all the women that I spoke to for my book, almost all of them never, ever work again in their chosen profession. Now, that is outrageous. So the men who harass are still being written about, like, what's their next gig going to be? and the women are just supposed to be forgotten and invisible.
You write, and I'm quoting, "I was a product of my times, a little sister of the women who made names for themselves in broadcast journalism, women like Diane Sawyer, Jane Pauley, Katie Couric, Connie Chung, Oprah Winfrey, and Christian Amanpour." Now, did any of them talk to you about having had problems along the way?
Some of them privately have now, but no, not in the past.
I was a friend of an even earlier pioneer, Marlene Sanders, the first woman to anchor a nightly news program and the first woman sent to cover the war in Vietnam. We never talked about sexual harassment, but she did talk about the constant struggles to even get the kind of respect that was required for her to get those assignments, despite the fact that she proved to be a fabulous journalist.
Mm-hmm. Well, and look at how times have changed. We have so many more women now as journalists. And you know what that does? That means that issues that concern women actually get covered. You know, in the past, it was gender bias by just not covering those particular stories. But now that you have women with at least 50% of the ranks as journalists, they're pushing for those stories. So on that front, I feel like we've made success.
Now, sexual harassment is not exclusively about powerful men hitting on women. Have you heard from men who have experienced it and felt powerless?
Yeah, you know, I was just telling your producer that this morning on another radio interview, one of the hosts, who was a man, told me that it happened to him and that he was groped on the job by a woman who was his boss. So I want to make sure that I'm reaching out to men as well. It's a smaller percentage, but it is definitely happening. And you know, men face the same reaction. He said when he came forward, people were like, oh, come on, just man up. You know, we fall back into those same phrases that are so detrimental. He wasn't believed either.
Or men would say, it should happen to me.
Well, they might have that reaction. Listen, you know, phrases like locker room talk and boys will be boys, those are excuses.
You say that it's time to reject rigid gender roles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, I talk about how my son and my daughter equally like to cook and bake. And I love it when they do. We used to have an easy bake oven that happened to be pink, and my son saw no problem with using that and cooking me up some great concoction. I think it's important to not gender stereotype and tell my daughter she can't play football either.
You discuss social media in the book. We're seeing an awful lot of this sort of thing play out in social media for people of all ages.
Mm-hmm. So what I discuss in the book is that I believe social media is incredibly difficult for our kids now. I mean, it was hard enough when you and I were growing up in middle school, and now everything is just exemplified by social media and likes and dislikes. So I feel it's really, that's one of our greatest crises in our next generations. However, on the issue of sexual harassment in the last couple of days, with the hashtags trending like Me Too, and allowing women to come forward and men to share their stories, I feel like social media has been so beneficial to this cause because it's keeping the national dialogue going. And it's allowing women and men to speak freely and publicly to the world.
I was thinking about the situation of Colin Kaepernick, who claims that for speaking out, he has been punished. He can't get a job in football, even though he has better record than some quarterbacks who are on teams right now. How does that affect somebody like you?
Oh, it's very analogous. I mean, it's analogous to not just me, but all the other women and men who've suffered from sexual harassment. They're blackballed.
Have you been blackballed?
No. But I hope to be the person that breaks through that so that other women will be able to follow. Wouldn't it be wonderful if corporations took all the women who've lost their jobs because they just told the truth and said, hey, we're going to hire these women back? Wouldn't that be an amazing thing to do? But yeah, Colin's story is very analogous in the sense of being pushed out because you took a stand and you spoke up.
Well, one of the things that is obvious from the story you're telling is that we have to change some of the other deals. The whole arbitration, the private arbitration law, has that been challenged in court?
Oh yes, the Supreme Court has actually ruled on that. And the you know, they basically have ruled in favor of keeping arbitration clauses in place. So what I'm trying to do on Capitol Hill, my advocacy in a bipartisan fashion, is to just do baby steps right now. I don't think it's realistic that both parties are going to come together and totally get rid of arbitration clauses. But what I'm asking them to do is get rid of the secrecy aspect. The power pendulum changes dramatically when suddenly the women's claims would be public. Oh, well, maybe the harasser then rethinks about what they're about to do. So I've been meeting privately with Republicans because Democrats are already on my side on this issue. I am extremely optimistic that sometime very soon I will be introducing a bipartisan bill. It has to be bipartisan or it will never pass. And wouldn't it be interesting if it ended up on President Trump's desk?
Well, what are you suggesting there? The president has been accused of sexual harassment.
Right. So that wouldn't that make it fascinating that he would have to make a decision about whether or not to sign such a bill?
Or even pursue it as government policy?
Well, yes, but I would love to put the challenge in front of him to say, let's do something about this issue.
Do you think it would have been different if you hadn't been working at Fox, if you had been at, MSNBC or CNN?
I have no idea because I've never worked at either of those institutions. I worked at CBS News, and I was not sexually harassed there, so I can say that.
But the reason I ask is I was wondering whether this is an industry-wide thing or whether certain companies, certain organizations are more likely to have a culture that allows for this sort of thing.
Well, I think what I could say about that is that many times the tone is set from the top, and then the enablers kick in. And so you normalize it within the culture of the company. I'm certainly not going to speak or predict about how any other companies are being run.
Mm-hmm. Well, so where do we go from here? You have this organization, Gretchen's Gift of Courage Fund, that...
And all the proceeds of the book are going to that fund because I want to keep my work moving in the right direction for the next generations. I'm working on Capitol Hill to get this bill introduced and then passed. Of course, I've been working...
You said you've been speaking to Republicans as well as Democrats.
Privately with Republicans,
and what kind of response have you been getting?
Well, you know what? When I tell them my story and the thousands of other women's stories, and they all have, for the most part, if they're men, they have wives and they have daughters, they listen. This is what I've said. Sexual harassment is apolitical. When somebody harasses you, they don't ask you if you're a Republican or a Democrat first. They just do it.
Some men have been criticized for suggesting that you should think about this in terms of your mother or your sister. And the argument is you should be thinking about this in terms of just humans.
Hmm. Well, yes. But I think that the way that we get to people to pay attention to it first is to get them to talk about and think about people that are close to them. In my unscientific study, this is why I'm optimistic about men becoming a part of the equation. On the streets of New York City, I get stopped more by men than I do women, and they want to shake my hand and they say, thank you for my daughters.
Mm.
So if I need to get to them at the heartstring first, I don't really care how I get to them, but I have found that very rewarding that men have felt that way.
On the other hand, there was a video that was done, I think last year or a couple of years ago, and a very attractive woman walking through New York City and recorded all of the catcalls and the like. There are actually, I gather, the French are talking about outlawing catcalls.
I don't know how you do that. Listen, that is a form of sexual harassment. Those are just like the trolls on social media.
But why do you think that this has become a political issue? Why do you have to go convince Republicans but not Democrats? Well, after all, as we said earlier, this is something that men of all political stripes have engaged in.
Well, because it's a much broader issue with arbitration clauses in general and eradicating them completely. It's the philosophy of being on the side of big business and not. So it's a much greater issue than just taking the secrecy out of it. And that's why I'm trying to chip away at this piece by piece. I mean, I'm being smart about it, because if I go in and try to blow up the whole thing, I know it's not going to happen. Listen, nothing gets done on Capitol Hill. Let's talk about anything that's gotten done recently. Nothing. Wouldn't this be awesome if Republicans and Democrats came together on this bill that I'm going to propose for women? Women vote. Republicans and Democrats should care about getting the female vote.
But we also saw in Congress a situation where in discussing health care changes, not one woman was invited into the caucus.
I know. Please. Sexual harassment is rampant on Capitol Hill.
Some men even suggested that we, politicians, that we shouldn't have to pay for women giving birth, because after all, men don't do that.
Oh, isn't that so 2017? That's outrageous, you know? And this is why there's been a call to action over the last year for so many more women to run for office. You know that the numbers are way up. Only 20% of Congress right now is female. So we need to have the female voice. I mean, it goes back to women in general having a voice, too. Did you know that the majority of people who call their members of Congress are men? Women need to know that they have the power to be able to speak up, going back to my whole message of my book. It's not just about sexual harassment. It's about speaking up and being fierce about everything in your life.
So were you pleased when, after the election, there were all these women's marches around the country?
Of course. I mean, that signaled that women have said enough already, and they're not going to take it anymore. I mean, I know some women were really upset by the election, but I looked at it in a positive way. When you move to New York, they say location, location, location. I feel right now timing, timing, timing. This issue and women in general speaking up, it's a movement right now.
But it also helps, I'm sure, that you have the support of your husband.
Well, that was crucial. But, you know, it was also difficult for us. It was very difficult over the last several years. But my husband has always believed in me having a career just like he has a career. And first and foremost, after being a husband and wife, we are business partners. And yes, that has made it easier for me to know that he is 100% behind me.
Because I imagine that there are marriages out there where a husband may not be as supportive, and that just makes it even tougher for the woman who is going through this terrible
thing. Yeah, but on our third date, after our blind date was our first, I said to him, I met him in Cleveland at the time, I said, don't call me back if you don't want to eventually live in New York City, because that's where I'm going. And luckily, he wanted to.
So the New York City was the test.
Oh, yes. New York City was the goal. And New York City was also the test. But 20 years later, here we are.
A caller asks, do you think back to your work on Fox and having to listen to the statements of co-anchors who have made some very problematic claims, statements that many would call sexist?
Mm. Well, there's a videotape out there circulating with all of those statements looped together that people can find by Googling. I think that'll explain exactly how I felt.
Did you have to bite your tongue?
Yeah, you know, one time in my past career, I did walk off the set, which I talk about in the book.
It made a big splash at that moment.
Mm-hmm. I've always stood up well, let me just say this. I have been an advocate for women my entire career. And my mom used to actually complain to me when I started in the business. She'd be like, why do you always have to talk to me about women's rights? And I'm like, because, Mom, I got into the real world and I figured out that there's bias. When I played the violin, they didn't really give a rip if you were a boy or a girl. When you were in school and you were doing well, they didn't care if you were a boy or a girl. But in the real world, I found out that they did. Well, guess what? My mom in the last 10 years has been running a company herself. And within the first week, she called me up and she said, I now know what you've been talking about for so long.
You're going to be speaking with Samantha Bee tomorrow night at the 92nd Street Y. Now, Samantha Bee is an interesting case because she wasn't offered one of the nighttime shows, even though the show that she has is very popular. Mm. Not that the people who are doing those shows are anything but wonderful, but still, you have to wonder why. I think since Joan Rivers, we haven't really seen anybody hosting one of the nighttime shows.
Maybe I'll switch around the question and answer period, and I'll ask her that question tomorrow night. You know, she was a huge advocate of mine through my entire story. And actually, she gave me a lot of comic relief when I would watch her show because, I mean, I have to be honest, some of my days were dark. Mm-hmm. And aside from my son always waking up with a smile on his face, Samantha Bee gave me a lot of laughs. So I'm looking forward to that event tomorrow.
It's at 8 o'clock at the 92nd Street Y tomorrow night. And if you want any ticket information, you can go to our website at wnyc.org/lopate. And then I suspect you're going to be talking about this book around the country. Have you been doing, talking at bookstores? Have you been signing books? What are women saying to you when they come up and ask for you to sign the book?
Yeah. So the book just officially launched yesterday. But yes, I'll be going to Los Angeles coming up on Saturday and doing many more things in New York. And of course, digitally is the way also to promote books in this day and age. I'm also giving a TED Talk coming up on November 2nd on this issue, which I think will be incredibly important. I've had a lot of women approach me with tears in their eyes to tell me that they've had the same kind of experiences, and they just know that I get it, even if I don't say that much and they don't say that much to me. And if I have empowered any of them to come forward, then I have made a difference.
Just one more thing. You still playing the violin?
I'm not, and I should. But my kids are both exceptional pianists, and so vicariously through them, I'm still doing music.
A little bit of practice. You'll get your chops back.
It's not like riding a bike, unfortunately. Your fingers, they get rusty.
Gretchen Carlson's book is Be Fierce, Stop Harassment and Take Your Power Back. It is published by Center Street, which is a division of Hachette. And it has been my great pleasure to have you as my guest on my show today.
Thank you so much, Leonard. I really appreciate it.